As we enter into worship, let us put away the pressures of the world that ask us to perform, to wear masks. This is a community of compassion and welcoming. You do not have to do anything to earn the love within these walls. You only have to bring the gift of your body, no matter how able, your seeking mind, no matter how busy, and your willing heart, no matter how broken. Bring all that you are and all that you love to this hour we share together. Our prayer and meditation this morning is adapted from writings by Jack Mendelsohn and Tim Haley. We come to this sacred space to grow, to heal, to stretch mind and heart, to be challenged and renewed, to help build a world with more justice and mercy in it, to be counted among the hopers and the doers. In the face of cynicism and darkness around us and within, we seek to align ourselves with a living community that would affirm rather than despair, that would think and act rather than simply adjust and succumb. Let us open ourselves here, now, to the process of becoming more whole, of living more fully, of giving and forgiving more freely, of understanding more completely the meaning of our lives here on this earth.
My reading this morning is excerpted from a longer piece by the Reverend Mark Bellatini, and he has adapted it from the Jewish prayer, the Kol Nidre. We vowed not so long ago to live lives that added, not subtracted. We promised not so long ago to live lives that matched our words, lives not hard and brittle with anger, but soft with letting go. We made an oath not so long ago to live lives that reached for the stars and did not consist of strings of little disappointments or fragments of shattered dreams we once used as mirrors to see how good we looked. We are free not to promise to be good, but simply to get on with loving one another. We are free not to vow great transformations, but to engage life with tenderness and understanding and outpourings of kindness. We are free not to swear oaths of everlasting loyalty and righteousness, but to continue to be generous to each other and to ourselves, and to begin again in love. What a treat it is to hear the music of 1001 Nights Ensemble. It is an example of Middle Eastern music that demonstrates, at least to these Western ears, the multifaceted and eclectic character of the cultures from which it rises. And to some of our ears, it demonstrates the influences of the various cultures on one another, even though some of those cultures continue to be at war. The mutual influence might be shown in the fact that among the peoples of the book, that is, Islam and Judaism, The Ramadan period is just now ending, a time of self-examination for Muslims, and our Jewish neighbors are just now beginning to celebrate the High Holy Days. The High Holy Days is the period of time in the autumn that the Jewish faith calls the Days of Awe, and which ends with the establishment of the Jewish New Year. This year, the Holy Days began at sundown on September 18th with Rosh Hashanah and will end with Yom Kippur at sundown on September 28th. And I hope I am right about the 28th. I get mixed up when we're counting sundowns as to what day it is. I know somebody will correct me. During Yom Kippur, a special prayer, the Kol Nidre, will be recited. Kol Nidre means all vows, and in this context, it asks God to forgive the people for the vows that they have made to God but have been unable to keep during the year just passed. However, the prayer does not apply to the promises that people have made to one another. These vows can be broken only by the consent of the person to whom they were made. Thus, the holy day of Yom Kippur is characterized by a sincere effort to examine one's conscience and to live up to the promises that one has made. What are the promises that we Unitarian Universalists make? What is the meaning of covenant with one another here at the First Unitarian Church of Austin? As an example, Hannah Arendt, German political philosopher and one of my major heroes, says this: "Promises are the uniquely human way of ordering the future, making it predictable and reliable to the extent that is humanly possible." End quote. For us, covenant rests at the very heart of what it means to be a religious community. It is the central unifying promise or commitment that binds people together in voluntary loyalty. When I say covenant, and this may be a word that's a bit difficult for some of you, and I'm prepared for that, I'm talking about our explicit or implicit expression of how we agree to walk together as a community of faith. And the questions that a congregational covenant seeks to answer are: what are the qualities that sustain our life together as a congregation engaged in mission? What are the promises we make or the expectations that we have that guide that relationship of members within a congregation? In other words, as a congregation, what hopes do we share? What promises are we willing to undertake in order to realize those hopes? And how shall we treat each other along the way? I see some of you cupping your ears, and I'm aware that you're having difficulty hearing me, so I'm hoping that I will be able to make myself a little bit more understood as we go along here. Please let me know if it's still difficult for you to hear. It is my understanding that the First Unitarian Universalist Congregation Church of Austin does not operate with an explicit covenant of right relation at present. Perhaps you developed one in the past, and I have been looking, but I have not yet been able to find it. However, in the next few weeks, I plan to demonstrate to you how easy it is for you to develop a covenant for your own committees and small groups. These are agreements that you will make on your own as a community of the church, and I will do my best to guide you. All I ask to you, of you committee chairs and leaders of groups, is that you put me on your agenda toward the beginning of your next meeting, and I will help you pull together a covenant, a group of promises that will be appropriate for your committee in short order. I've seen it done, and I have learned it from the youth. They are masters at this. Important as it is to state it, I believe that a covenant goes far beyond the actual words on a page. It has to do with practice as a community. I want to give you an historical example of how covenant came into being for us religious liberals. In 1550, one Robert Brown, inspired by the Protestant Reformation, proposed a revolution in church life. Churches should come into being as a covenant among persons, he said, not through, quote, common assent to a doctrine, or through sacraments administered by priests, hierarchically arrayed and apostolically descended, end quote. Rather, they should join themselves by mutual agreement to walk together, to keep the commandments, to choose their ministers and teachers, and put forth and debate questions in order to learn the truth. Brown hoped that there would be a church in which people would mutually agree, quote, that any might protest, appeal, complain, exhort, dispute, reprove, watch for disorders, reform abuses, and debate matters, end quote. Don't think we have too much trouble with that. Puritan scholar A.S.P. Woodhouse, from whose book Puritans and Liberty these passages were taken, remarks that in Puritan times, quote, the congregation was the school of democracy. There the humblest member might hear and join in the debate, might witness the discovery of the natural leader, and participate in that curious process by which there emerges from the clash of many minds a vision clearer and a determination wiser than any single mind could achieve. End quote. Rebecca Parker, president of the Star King School for the Ministry in Berkeley, California, one of our two Unitarian Universalist theological schools, says, quote, covenant is first most, not a verbal agreement, but a practice. The words may help remind us of our promises, but they are not the covenant itself. So I ask you, if covenant is a practice, what are we to practice? Parker suggests that we are given, and what we practice is, quote, membership in a community of resistance to oppression. Membership in a community of resistance to oppression. And she says this, in the presence of injustice and oppression, our forebears embraced freedom. They advocated for free speech, dissent, open debate, tolerance of different opinions in a disciplined search for truth. They challenged economic systems that neglected the poor, justice systems that were unfair, prison systems that were cruel, and economic practices that concentrated wealth in the hands of a few. The covenant of which we are a part is a tradition that resists oppression by directly challenging the authority of the oppressors and by establishing new structures. Oppression is resisted finally not by argument, not by protest marches, not by the passing of resolutions, but by the practices of covenanted church life. Oppression is resisted by the practices of covenanted church life, said Parker in her address at the General Assembly of the Unitarian Universalist Association in June 1998. She added that what we need to do in congregational life is to establish more strongly the practices that embody loving, just, and sustainable community, and to be a visible alternative to the forms of oppression, alienation, and injustice that are alive in our time. Practices, the way we relate to another, how we treat one another as we are pursuing the goals of mission, practices that show that we are resisting oppression of one another in our very midst. This is what is before us as a congregation, as an important step toward healing and going forward. And in your work with the bridge builders, after the wrenching end of your last settled ministry in December, the development of a covenant of right relation is right up there with the other recommendations. It is my hope that as you in your committees and small working groups of the congregation experience the ease and clarity of developing a covenant, your experiences may be the basis of a congregational covenant of right relation that you can agree on and can incorporate into your daily interactions with one another. Now, I don't know what the sessions will come up with, either with those committees or within the entire congregation. I am only here as a resource, not to do the work for you. But in my experience with other congregations and my research into the area of relational covenants, I see certain words and phrases coming up over and over again. Here's an example from a congregational covenant. Quote, "We should exhibit behaviors that enhance the dignity and inherent worth of all participants, such as expressing sincere appreciation, allowing for human fallibility, dealing directly with one another, speaking moderately, being creative in problem solving, maintaining a sense of humor, actively listening and clarifying what we hear, letting others have their say, respecting boundaries that may differ from our own, respecting confidentiality, refraining from harmful gossip about others, and speaking honestly." And from another congregation, also Unitarian Universalist, just a few passages here. Quote, "We will remind ourselves that we are all working for the same goal of supporting our church community. We will attempt to resolve our differences rather than leaving. We will remember to respect others' opinions, whether we agree with them or not. We will not ridicule or attack others by word or deed." And so forth. Some questions that may arise among you as you develop and think about developing a covenant of right relation for your congregation and for eventual support of that covenant. These questions might be, what are the benefits to having a covenant? What would the congregation gain if it agreed to a set of promises about the way they treat each other as they are journeying together? Now, this may lead to some reflections, including asking yourselves about the congregation's very reason for being. For example, since we do not all come from the same place theologically, what is it that binds us together? What helps newcomers our guests get their bearings when they walk through our doors, often after days, weeks, or months of false starts. Do members and newcomers find space here for the safe exploration of their values for spiritual growth? When newcomers observe how the congregation members treat one another, do they see respectful, caring, and attentive interactions? And if not, then what would draw them into membership and community with you? One of my answers to the question, what would the congregation gain from agreeing to a set of promises about how you treat each other, is that by developing a covenant, you have made the implicit explicit. You have moved your expectations of yourselves and of one another from the category of, well, everybody knows A, B, and C, to the explicit stating of expectations so that everybody can know A, B, and C. I believe that you are ready to enlist the help of a committee, including me, to create a covenant of right relation, that you are seeking to engage in practices that involve, that embody loving, just, and sustainable community. I truly believe that in good faith, you can move as a congregation toward your mission and that you can treat each other well along the way. It is not easy to practice a covenant. Sometimes it seems impossible to affirm those relationships that make us who we are as a congregation and not just isolated individuals. But practicing a covenant can call us into more fulfilled community than we ever thought possible. Rebecca Parker's words can lead us, and they must be our last words today. She says, "Let us covenant with one another to keep faith with the source of life, knowing that we are not our own, earth made us. Let us covenant with one another to keep faith with the community of resistance, never to forget that life can be saved from that which threatens it. By even small bands of people choosing to put into practice an alternative way of life. And let us covenant with one another to seek an ever deeper awareness of that which springs up inwardly in us, even when our hearts are broken by our own failure or the failure of others cutting into our lives, even when we have done all we can and life is still broken. There is a universal love that has never broken faith with us and never will." So may it be.
Please join me in saying the words for extinguishing the chalice, which are printed in your order of service. How do I do this? We extinguish this flame, not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we will carry in our hearts until we are together again. For those who seek God, may your God go with you. For those who embrace life, may life return your affection. And for those who seek a better path, may that path be found, and the courage to take it step by step by step.